All right. With the two most powerful senators in the room, we are convening the Transportation and Public Safety Committee meeting of Wednesday, March 5th, 2014. A quorum is not present. Oh, now we have three powerful senators in the room. All right. Bipartisanship, too. All right. But you'll still count for quorum. So we will start hearing the Transportation Department Technical Provisions Modifications Bill, Senate File 2154. Senator Reinert, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hope the tape was running for that most powerful senator's part.
Yes.
My mom will like that. And members, this is the Department of Transportation's agency bill, 2154, so I'll shortly turn it over to Mr. Rundine, who will walk us through it. I do want to be very clear, just so members know, it's largely non-controversial, except it does allow you to drive your car on Sundays. I just want to be upfront about that. So, with that, Mr. Chair, with your permission, I'll ask Mr. Rundine to walk us through.
Welcome, Mr. Rundine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Eric Rudine with MnDOT Government Affairs, and I'll just walk through the bill section by section. The first section of the bill amends Chapter 16A to match MnDOT practices on payment of interest to contractors. It also adds a provision that clarifies when an invoice for the purposes of a construction contract is received. And the clarification on the interest payments would specify that interest penalties don't accrue under this section of Chapter 16 for when there are disputes between a contractor and the department. Sections 2, 4, 5, 6, and 7 deal with projects where we have a multi-stage bidding process. Mr. Chair, there actually should be an amendment to delete those sections of the bill. We heard after the bill was drafted from Associated General Contractors that they were concerned about including those provisions, and so we've agreed to continue working with them and to repeal or to delete those sections out of the bill for at least for this session. We'll perhaps be back in a future year with those items.
All right. We'll distribute the amendment and then take the vote on that when we have a quorum.
Right. So I'll just ignore those sections for now. But Section 3 of the bill talks about it actually deletes a reference to a 60-day cure period. A cure period is a time that, for example, if you pour concrete, you would normally let that concrete cure. So the statute currently requires the department to wait 60 days before we can find a contractor in default. And given Minnesota's short construction season, we feel that 60 days is an unreasonable period of time. And there are instances where a contractor might just walk off a project. And so even in that case, we would still have to wait 2 months before we could find the contractor in default and then go after the surety bond to try to fix the problem there. Section 8 of the bill amends something that was actually enacted last year. You might remember there was a directive that the department go through all the land under its control and dispose of property that's no longer needed. And there was a restriction put on that said that if the property is identified as potentially having a pedestrian or bicycle facility, that the department could not dispose of it. And we certainly agree with that restriction. However, the way that it was implemented has been a little bit problematic because there are instances where we could give the land to a local unit of government and then that local unit of government would put in a bike ped facility. Or there are even some limited cases where we might sell the land to a developer and that developer would put in a bike ped trail as part of their development. And so we would like to be able to dispose of the land with some protection. There would be, for example, a restriction in the deed or something to that effect that would protect the use for the pedestrian and bicycle facility. Sections 9 and 10 of the bill relate to state aid funds. Currently, state aid budgets are based on 5 months of actual receipts and 7 months estimated receipts. But we feel that the department's ability to estimate those funds has improved so that we can move to 12 months of estimated receipts. And getting that information to local government sooner will help them in their budget process. Sections 11 and 12 of the bill relate to town bridge authority. Counties are responsible for inspecting township bridges, but there have been some instances where there's confusion if one of those inspections finds a problem with a township bridge as to what authority the county has to address those problems. And so sections 11 and 12 reflect an agreement that was worked out between the townships and the counties on the process that should be followed if an inspection finds a problem on a township bridge. Sections 13 and 14 relate to traffic movements at reduced conflict intersections, and you should have a graphic that explains what these are. But rather on a four-lane highway, rather than allow traffic to go directly across or to turn directly, make a left turn on a four-lane highway, the traffic in this case would have to make a right turn, go down a short distance, and then make a U-turn to come back. And there have been some instances where law enforcement has ticketed people because they're making a U-turn and they're not turning into the closest lane, or they're making a right turn and they're not turning into that right lane. They're getting left immediately so they can make a U-turn. And so we worked with the State Patrol on this language, and if you're driving a semi, or even in some cases you might be driving a large SUV, you can't physically make a U-turn and stay in that closest lane, you would be allowed to turn into the farthest lane. There are several sections of the bill that update state statute to conform to some federal changes that were in MAP 21 related to agricultural vehicles. They provide statutory relief for the agriculture industry from some trucking regulations, and they also ensure consistency between interstate and intrastate regulations, specifically make changes to what's called covered farm vehicles, and providing exemption from some regulations involving the size of the vehicle, the hauling distance to the farm or ranch, and the cargo being transported. So, Mr. Chair, I wasn't planning to go through those changes specifically one by one unless there are questions, but you might remember last session there was some discussion at the very end of session about the new regulations in MAP 21, and a provision was enacted that prohibited Department of Public Safety from enforcing things that were in conflict with MAP 21, so that these changes just update the state laws to conform with federal law. Section 20 of the bill will allow the Transportation Economic Development Funds to be used until expended. There have been a couple of appropriations to the TED program, and some of that money is available until expended, but another part of the money is not available until expended, so we would just prefer that all of the money be available until expended. Sections 24 and 25 project down in Rochester. There is a project to renovate the district headquarters down there and also the truck station. And the change here shifts about $1.5 million between the two phases of the project. The first phase came in a little bit under budget, and the second phase is a little bit over what we estimated. And so there's a net zero impact there, but we do need the transfer between the appropriations. Section 26 of the bill corrects a cancellation amount from a previous flood appropriation. The cancellation was inadvertently overstated in a previous bill, and so we're changing the amount of that cancellation. That money has actually already been spent. It was just incorrectly listed in the previous cancellation. Section 27 27 amends last year's legislation regarding the turnback of Highway 66. And if you're familiar with turnbacks, hopefully they allow us to turn segments of highway over to counties or cities. And there was a law last year allowing us to turn over Highway 66 to Blue Earth County. The city of Mankato has since indicated that they would prefer that the segment within the city be transferred directly to them rather than going through the county. And so this just allows us to transfer that section of highway directly to the city. And then finally, in Section 28, we're repealing the legislative designation of Highway 309. This highway formerly served the Brainerd State Hospital. That hospital is now closed, but the property is still owned by Department of Administration. Much of the roadway has actually been removed already. What's there is really serving as a driveway to the property that exists, and the Department of Administration is willing to take over that roadway from MnDOT.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Rudine. Questions, members? We're one shy of a quorum, so we can't even take our...
Mr. Chair, there's one.
Senator Kent.
Having trouble remembering my name again. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Kent.
I just wanted to know if this bill would allow cars to drive on Sundays to Wisconsin.
Excuse me. A quorum is present. So, Sunday drivers. All right. Why don't we take our amendments? So we have two amendments. Explain quickly the A2.
Mr. Chair, I would offer the A2 amendment.
Senator Reinert offers the A2.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Rudine, I think, made reference to the A2 amendment. It eliminates several sections that have to do with late submissions to MnDOT and requiring MnDOT to reject late bids or late statements of qualifications, et cetera. I think that's the major change. The other ones are just technical or clarifying.
All right, and this was at the request of the AGC to take out those sections. Work on it for a year.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Questions, members, on the A2? Comments? Does anyone want to testify? Well, I guess it's an author's amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion carries. And the A1 amendment.
Mr. Chair, I could address the A1 amendment if
you'd
like.
Mr. Rudy.
Mr. Chair, the A1 amendment's not coming from me, so if someone on the committee wants to offer
it. You have a copy of it?
I do.
Okay.
My understanding, MnDOT doesn't have an objection, but.
So whose is the A1 amendment? Who would like to offer it? I understand it's at the request of the township, says Mr. Sulem here. So, well, maybe we'll deal with it at the next committee stop. All right.
Well, I'll move it.
All right.
I'll move the amendment.
Champion of the township, Senator Jensen, offers the A1. Ms. Berezovsky, can you explain what you know about it?
Yes, Mr. Chair. The A1 amendment, it amends the section of law that has to do with distribution of CASA money out of the town road account and how it's allocated among the towns. So the formula is set out here. And what this amendment does is it strikes out a reference to the levy for road and bridge purposes, because last year the legislature enacted a provision that I believe it eliminated a requirement that towns had to levy a minimum amount in order to qualify for state aid. So this was made last year by the legislature.
So Ms. Berezovsky would have no, it's just a conforming to something we've already done.
That's correct.
All right, so we're not doing something dramatically different or radical here. You don't have to answer that. Senator Osmond.
Do we have a quorum?
We do have a quorum.
Okay. Just curious.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, we had a quorum 1 second before you walked in the room. So
it wasn't just me.
Yeah. You didn't force
Shucks.
Us to take action. Yes. We were already able to act. All right, questions, members, on the A1? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion carries. Mr. Sulem, Senator Jensen is your champion. She did you a good turn. All right, anything further, members, on Senate File 2154? Bruce, did you want to? All right. Welcome to the committee.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you were ready to move the bill, I wanted to get on the record briefly.
All right, thank you.
Bruce Clavin, I represent the Minnesota wheat growers, all three sugar companies, the barley growers, the turkey growers, and a number of other ag groups. And the Farm Bureau and Farmers Union, some of the other folks that are around here on ag would also be here, but we don't all need to come. Thank you, Senator Reinert, for bringing this bill. We support the sections relating to covered farm vehicles and for Mr. Rudin for putting this together. We did make an effort on this last year. It was a Senator Scoy Bill 700. I like the way they did it better, so we didn't have to reinvent the wheel. We're having one discussion here with the patrol and the feds that we want to try to get clarified before the floor, and that is how this bill relates to roadside inspections. There's a section in the federal .9 talking about roadside inspections. We don't have an amendment. It's, again, non-controversial, I think, as far as the bill author goes, but we wanted to go on the record saying we're trying to get the nexus of roadside inspections and this new law figured out before harvest time. So we hope to do that between here and the floor, and if there's an amendment, we would bring that forward. But otherwise, this should just be fine. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Clayton. Members, we have a typo that we need to correct by amendment. Ms. Berezovsky.
Mr. Chair, on 15.6, it would be delete with and insert within.
Okay. Senator Kent makes that motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion passes. Senator Reinert, do you have a motion?
Aye. Mr. Chair, I'd move adoption of Senate File 2154 with recommendation from the committee, and I don't know that we need to stop at fiscal, so.
And we're in policy committee, so, but I believe state and local has requested this.
Oh.
Yes.
Okay.
So with referral to state and local government.
With recommendation to state and local government.
All right. Senator Osmond.
Mr. Chair, and to the testifiers, Section 8. We're doing some possible land swaps, land transfers. Do we have a indication as far as how much land we're talking about in Section 8?
Okay. Mr. Chair, Senator Osmick, I'll let Mr. Bedeen speak to that. He did cover it just moments before you came in. It's a follow-on from some changes.
Okay.
A request we made at the department last year, but...
Mr. Rudin.
Mr. Chair and Senator Osmick, the requirement that was enacted last year requires the department to look at all of the land under the department's control and to evaluate whether or not it is still needed for any transportation purpose, and if it's not, then we are to dispose of that land. The restriction was put on that if there is a bike ped facility or a potential for a bike ped facility, we are not allowed to dispose of the land. However, there are some instances where by transferring the land to a local unit of government or selling the land to a developer, that the local government or the developer would put in a bike ped facility. So under current law, MnDOT was required to maintain control of the land, the bike ped facility would not be constructed, but by transferring it to the local government or a developer, a bike ped facility would be constructed. And so we feel that meets with the intent of what was enacted last session. There are a couple of parcels that are currently under consideration for transfer to local governments where this has been an issue, and so that's why we're bringing the change forward.
So, Mr. Chair,
with
the question, while I don't think I necessarily have a problem with what you just said, I was just asking more directly to how many acres, how many feet, what are we talking? We're talking 15,000 square miles of property or 2 feet?
Mr. Chair and Senator Osmick, we're currently aware of two separate parcels, one in Shakopee and one in Invergrove Heights. I don't know. So, 60 acres approximately.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Senator Reinert renews his motion.
Renew my motion.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries. Thank you, Senator Reinert. few minutes, members. I thought you were boycotting this committee in protest of being here till 10 o'clock last night.
I wouldn't be boycotting that. I wasn't here until 10 o'clock last night.
Oh, we had fun. I didn't even provide pizza, and everyone stayed here till 10. All right, Senator Carlson, you are up next with Senate File 2174.
I think in your personal way, though.
We have an A1. Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm here to present Senate File 2174, which is a bill for an act to increase the ability of the law enforcement to use the ignition interlock system to allow drivers to still drive after they have had some problems with driving behaviors. What this does is it primarily gives the courts the ability to give the driver's license back to someone who oftentimes is driving anyway. And so this is the agency has asked that we be able to extend this ability to people that are in that cusp of being able to drive yet, or of being capable of driving, but need to have transportation for their daily business. And I have this Jody Oscarson here to explain from the agency.
Thank you. Welcome, Ms. Oscarson. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Mr. Chair, my name is Jody Oscarson, and I'm with the Office of Traffic Safety. And what this bill does is it allows for offenders that have been convicted of a criminal vehicular operation that have been canceled and inimical by the state, which means that they've had three or more alcohol offenses in 10 years or four or more on record. And it allows them to be involved in the ignition interlock program, which makes them safer drivers. Currently, they are not allowed to drive, and they lose their license anywhere from 1 to 5 years. We also have people that lose it for 10 years, but they're not included in this bill. So this would allow them to enter into the ignition interlock program beyond the limited license, just as our other ignition interlock participants are.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Questions, members?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I do Carlson. Have an A1 amendment. That
we'll All right.
And Senator, perhaps Ms. Berezovsky can explain what the changes are.
All right. Before we get to the A1, Senator Westrom.
Chair, thank you. Question, Jody. You said not for those that have lost it for 10 years, only five or less. Is there
Correct.
A reason for that?
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, Representative Senator Westrom. Last year when the language was passed, people that were convicted of a fatality were not included, and they lose their license for 10 years.
So
that's why they would not be a part of this.
The only ones that are at 10 years is because there was a fatality involved. If they were anemic to public safety, they've been breaking the law a lot, they just haven't caused a fatality, then they'd be at 5 years or less. Or is there anybody at 10 years that's not caused a fatality?
Ms. Oscarson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Westrom. It's canceled inimical to public safety, uh-huh. and that is people that have received three offenses in 10 years, three alcohol offenses, or four or more on record. And so those people that also, if they had three offenses and then they received a criminal vehicular operation,
right.
bodily harm or great bodily harm, they would be able to be in the ignition interlock program with this bill. Otherwise, they would not be able to participate.
And the reason, Mr. Chair, is because they've caused a fatality. That would be the sole reason they're in the 10-year category versus the others. Is that right?
Ms. Oscars.
Mr. Chair, Senator Westrom, yes.
Thank you.
Right. Thank you. Senator Carlson offers the A1 amendment, author's amendment.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Thompson.
Just out of curiosity to the witness, so following up on Senator Westrum here, so we're going to put, we're going to allow people who have three, what is it right now? Who can get on the internet lock program right now?
Ms. Oscarson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Tomasini, it's right now anyone at point one, anybody that doesn't revoke for alcohol, implied consent can get into the Ignition Interlock program, or those that are canceled inimical if they have the 3 and 10 years or four more offenses on record, they are under the current Ignition Interlock program. The problem is for people that have a criminal vehicular operation where they've severely injured or injured someone, because that was not included in the language last year, they would not be able to participate in the program. Our goal is to make our roads safer. So to have these people involved in the Ignition Interlock program would ensure that people are driving safely instead of driving illegally.
And
Senator Thompson.
If I understood the, thank you, Mr. Chair, if I understood what you just said to Senator Westrum, if a person has been killed, then they will not be allowed to participate in the program, according to this amendment.
Ms. Oscars.
Mr. Chair, Senator. Because that language was left out last year, yes, the anyone that was convicted of a criminal vehicular fatality would not be able to participate.
And is this bill trying to make allow them to participate? Is that what we're doing here? Because
I don't believe that's in this.
Ms. Oscars.
I'm sorry. Mr. Chair, Senator, that is not a part of this. This is just to allow those that are currently canceled and receive a criminal vehicular operation conviction to be able to be in the interlock program.
So they've had, these people have had like 3 and 10 years or 4 on record. Should we not just include the ones that had a fatality also?
Ms. Oscars.
Mr. Chair, Senator, that would make
I mean,
yes,
are these people in jail?
Sense.
Are the people who have, I mean, are they in jail after they've been involved in an accident where there's a fatality?
You know, currently under the current law, when someone is charged with a criminal vehicular operation, it's usually a couple years before they go to jail, go to court, get convicted, and then they'll do some jail time. But in the meantime, they would have a license until the conviction comes through.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, don't they lose their license immediately at the scene of the accident?
If it,
Ms. Oscar.
Mr. Chair, Senator, if it's a criminal vehicular operation under current law, now July 1st, that's going to change, and they would be suspended. But as of currently, the department has to wait until a conviction is received before the person loses their privilege. There is a provision that they can be suspended under a criminal complaint for a year, but if they're not charged by that time, they can get their license back and then have full privileges until they're convicted. So some people could be out there really driving for 2, 3, 4 years before they're convicted, if it's a lengthy trial, and then at that point they'd be convicted and they'd lose their privileges. And depending on the severity, it would be 1, 3, 5 years. If there is a fatality, it's 10 years.
So, Mr. Chairman, if you get a DWI, you lose your license, right? I mean, for 30 days automatically, if I'm not mistaken, and then generally longer than that. And aren't we talking CVOs with alcohol? Isn't that what we're talking? A fatality?
Ms. Oscarson.
Mr. Chair, Senator, yes. With current implied consent, people are revoked if they've failed the breath test. They're revoked within 7 days. If they take a fail a blood or a urine test, they are revoked once the results are sent to the department. And then they're revoked for the amount of time. If it's under 0.16, it's 90 days. Over 0.16 on a first-time offender, it's 1 year. And then second-time offenders, 2 years. And third offenders are 3 years. And then it goes to six,
so,
3, 4, and 6 years.
So can you get a CVO without having alcohol involved?
Ms. Oskarson.
Mr. Chair, Senator, very few. There's maybe one or two a year that the department would receive that don't involve alcohol.
Okay, so how is it that a person who gets a criminal vehicular homicide charge against them does not lose their license if alcohol is involved?
Ms. Oskarson.
Mr. Chair, Senator, they will eventually lose their license once the convictions come in. And as I said, as of July 1st, that law will change that the person certified to the department, then they will be suspended indefinitely until the conviction comes in. So that law is changing so that if there's a criminal vehicular operation involved, they would be suspended. And then once the conviction comes in, then the action, they would get revoked.
But wouldn't they get the wouldn't they get the DWI first while they're getting the CVO?
Ms. Oskarson.
Mr. Chair, Senator, usually what happens with a criminal vehicular operation is they're charged. There's rare times when an implied consent is issued, but for the most part, it is not. There's not an implied consent that's issued. It's the charge of criminal vehicular operation.
Mr. Chairman, if you get a DWI and you blow and you automatically lose your license, okay, and then you were involved in an accident that killed somebody, you've lost your license as a result of the DWI, and then don't those things line up? I mean, it sounds like they don't line up.
Ms. Oskarson.
Mr. Chair, Senator, you're still losing your privileges for the criminal vehicular. And as I stated, the law is changing July 1st so that everyone but fatalities would lose their privileges immediately. They would be involved in the ignition interlock program. So they are going to be losing their privileges immediately. Unfortunately, last year, the language including people that cause a fatality was taken out of the legislation. And so right now that's not included. So they would go under the law that's current, which means that once the conviction comes in, they would lose their privileges for 10 years.
So,
Senator Thompson.
Today we're trying to put back, we're trying to give the people who have had 3 DWIs in the last 10 years or 4 on record the ability to participate in the ignition interlock program, but we're not going to allow the people who have had a CVO to participate. Is that what we're not going to include them? Is that what we're doing here?
Ms. Oskarson.
Mr. Chair, Senator, that I believe that would take an amendment to the bill to add that because it was left out last year. This bill was to take care of the fact that there was language left out last year that would allow those that are canceled and inimical to be included in the ignition interlock program.
So we maybe I should just listen to the explanation of the amendment and see what it says.
So, Senator Tomasoni, this was a result where we ended up last year keeping. Tell me if I'm wrong, Council Berezovsky, but last year, if I recall, this was the subject of a lot of back and forth in the conference committee. The House had a very strong position about keeping the CVH, criminal vehicular homicide, out of the ignition interlock program. Senate had a position of getting them in.
Was it House prevailed?
Is that right? Yeah.
The second one.
Today I don't think we're getting back to the CVH, correct? But we're kind of taking a half step forward, if I understand this proposal correctly. Does that make sense? Do you have any light to shed?
I can speak to the amendment.
All right.
If that's okay. It's time to do that.
All right. Senator Osmek, you're next on the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Carlson, does State Patrol, county sheriffs have an opinion on this by any chance? I know we got a couple people with guns in the room. Sort of curious if they had any opinion, whether this is good, bad, indifferent, they don't care. I don't think that's them cheering for this.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Osmek,
Senator Carlson.
My understanding was that there was not objection to it. I have not gotten any objection. That's been my understanding.
And this is an agency bill?
Yes.
Department of Public Safety. All right. Thank you. Maybe the A1 will help us. I don't know. Senator Carlson, the A1.
Yes. Move the A1 amendment.
All right.
And I have to rely on Ms. Berezovsky, who offered this to me, to explain exactly what it
does. Ms. Berezovsky, the A1.
Mr. Chair, what the A1 does is it distinguishes the violators into two different classes. The first class has fewer than two DWIs within the past 10 years or fewer than three ever. And then the second class has two or more qualified DWIs within the past 10 years or three or more ever. The first class, which is the fewer violations, is eligible to apply for conditional reinstatement under the Ignition Interlock Program. Conditional reinstatement of the driver's license subject to Ignition Interlock. The second class, which is the offenders who have offended more times, are eligible only to apply for a limited license subject to Ignition Interlock. So that is the intent of this amendment, to make that distinction. And it also changes the effective date to July 1, 2014, but it removes the language that says that it applies to crimes committed on or after. So those who had offended before July 1, 2014 would be picked up by this.
And Ms. Berezovsky, just to let us know quickly, if you can, what is the conditional reinstatement and what is a limited license?
Mr. Chair, I can speak to that, but I know Ms. Oskarson is the department expert in unlimited licenses, and she could probably give a more accurate answer.
Okay. So, Ms. Oskarson, conditional reinstatement and limited license.
Mr. Chair, conditional reinstatement means that a person that is revoked for an implied consent is allowed to get full driving privileges as long as they have an ignition interlock device in their vehicle and they use it. A limited license allows the person to drive to work, treatment, and to their AA or to probation visits, and it's allowed 60 hours a week.
I see. Okay. Thank you. All right. Question, Senator Thompson.
How about groceries? Is groceries in there anywhere?
Ms. Oskarson.
Mr. Chair, Senator. If a person is deemed to be a single head of household, they are allowed to get groceries if they have dependents. So they are allowed a certain amount of time, and it's exclusive to a certain store.
And Mr. Chairman, just one more follow-up. So as long as we're talking about ignition interlocks, so somebody gets a DWI and they lose their license for 90 days, do they have to go on the ignition interlock program, or can they wait till their license is reinstated after the 90 days to start driving again? I mean, are we requiring people to get on the ignition interlock program because they get a DWI?
Oskarson.
Mr. Chair, Senator, for the people that have a first or second time offender, they have the option of the ignition interlock. They can set out their time, but the people that have three offenses in 10 years or four or more on record, it is mandatory that they will not get a full driving privilege without any ignition or electric restriction unless they do their required amount of time. So it'll be 3, 4, 6 years on ignition or lock. So they have to do that in order to get full unrestricted driving privileges.
Okay. All right. On the A1 amendment.
Ms. Chair, I had a question. The reference 1.3 and 1.4 to incidents, is the intent convictions or incidents? There may be an incident, but not a conviction, a plea bargain.
On the A1, Senator?
Yes.
Incidents, 1.3 and 1.4. Yes. Senator Carlson.
That I'm not able to answer.
Ms. Oskarson, incidents.
Mr. Chair, Senator, that would be anyone that's charged with an implied consent or conviction. So it would cover both. The incident is the implied consent.
Or the conviction.
Or a DWI conviction.
Okay, thank you.
Both.
All right.
Okay.
So to follow up to that, Mr. Chairman, because I meant to ask this earlier. So implied driving incidents are referring to DWIs or implied consents. They're not referring to anything else. And how do we know that?
Ms. Oscarson.
Mr. Chair, Senator, that's how we refer to impaired driving incidents. It's implied consent or a DWI conviction.
So that's somewhere else in the statute?
Excuse me.
Foreman construction.
So,
Senator Tomasoni, I think Ms. Berezovsky is going to look, but she thinks that's just kind of form and construction and how we use that word.
She thinks what?
She thinks that's just kind of form and construction, how the word incidents is understood. Just through form.
I just want to make sure attorneys are interpreting it the same way that we think we are.
We have a defense attorney here. Incidents. Senator Champion, incidents referred is explained to us as either being an implied consent circumstance or a conviction of a DUI. Do you agree with that?
Qualify this. I'm familiar with it because, you know, when there's a DWI issue, there's the implied consent where you can, you know, challenge, but it's on a limited basis. And then the criminal notion is a totally different track. So there are two separate processes that a person has to go through. So I missed the other part of the conversation. Someone else was trying to talk to me, which is why I was trying to run in here real quick so I can get all this other great information. But there's implied consent, which is usually the Department of Public Safety, and so you really go and you try to deal with a very limited question of whether you should be able to retain your license.
Mr. Chairman, it sounds like he has plausible deniability.
All right. So, we're back to the A1 amendment. Are we ready to vote, members, on the A1? Nope. I don't see anyone saying no. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, no. Motion carries. All right. After the fact, though, do we have a response on incidents, form and use, how the word is understood commonly?
Mr. Chair, I was unable to find any formal definition, just done a real quick search of incidents.
Okay. All right. We'll look at that later. All right. So we're back to the bill, 2174 as amended. Anything further, members? Senator Carlson, do you have a motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess one of the things that I read this is impaired driving incidents is the term that we're looking at. It's impaired driving incidents. It's not just incidents. It's impaired driving incidents. So that would refer solely to driving while impaired, presumably alcohol.
All right.
Thank you. With that, Mr. Chair, if there aren't any other questions, I move Senate File 2174 to be recommended to pass.
As amended.
As amended. And referred to the do we refer it to our policy committee?
We're in policy. You can refer it straight over to judiciary.
It's been suggested that it go to judiciary. So
yes,
forward to judiciary committee.
Great, thank you. Any questions? Anything further? Would anyone like to testify? All in favor, say.
Can I just clarify something?
Yeah, Senator Champion.
I did have an opportunity to look at the amendment and talk a little to Senator Tomasoni about it, and I just wanted the committee to be kind of clear as to my interpretation of that the A1 amendment. Where it says where the participant has fewer than two qualified prior impaired driving incidences, that's usually for criminal purposes because like a DWI or alcohol driving related offense is enhanceable. So the first time you can get one and it's a DWI. Second time you can do the same exact thing and then the penalty is more severe because it goes from a misdemeanor to a gross misdemeanor. That's why it has to be qualified because it has to be an alcohol-related driving offense in order for it to count towards a certain number that would increase the severity of the crime. So I just wanted to that, and now that's different and separate and apart from my vantage point when you think in terms of the implied consent notion, because I think they're talking more along the criminal lines when you say qualify, because you have to qualify it for it to be enhanceable.
All right. Well, I thank you.
So, Mr. Chair,
I didn't confuse you anymore, but I want to make sure
I'm confused. So,
Senator Francis.
Question, Senator Champion. So, if you have two DWIs back to back, same conduct, the second one they wouldn't be qualified. They would have to be enhanced to be qualified.
No, Mr. Chair.
Senator.
Senator, the second one qualifies. Okay, the first one, the same conduct is a misdemeanor.
Yep.
The second time you can do the exact same thing, but because you have the prior, the second case becomes a gross misdemeanor. Even though it's the same conduct, that's what qualifies it. And so in order for it to be enhanceable, you have to have a qualified or basis for stacking it up, for lack of a better word.
Mm-hmm.
So another way of saying that is that first incident kind of gets swept in because the second incident occurs and they both become qualified. That's why we have a judiciary committee. They spend hours noodling over this stuff. So, all right. Ms. Berzovsky has something for us.
Mr. Chair and members, I just wanted to point out that under the statute that establishes the ignition interlock device program, it says that qualified prior impaired driving incident has the meaning given in section 169A03 sub 22. So that is defined, and the definition is for qualified prior impaired driving incident includes prior impaired driving convictions and prior impaired driving related losses of license. So that would be the implied consent and the DWI.
All right. Good work. That's why Senate counsel sits at the table. Inside joke there. All right. So we're on our way to judiciary. Might help if we have this again, this subject, a little chart maybe, or kind of helps us get understand all this stuff instead of just words. We like pictures. All in favor on the Carlson motion to send Senate File 2174 with recommendation as amended to the Committee on Judiciary. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, no. Motion carries. Thank you, Senator Carlson. All right, third and final bill. Senator Kent. Pupil transportation,
yes.
Senate File 2252.
This must be yours.
But it does.
What is that?
Oh. Okay. Welcome. Vice Chair Kent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm here today to introduce Senate File 2252. This is an agency bill from the Department of Public Safety as well, and this focus is on student safety in their area of pupil transportation. Just as a little background, in a former role in which I worked with folks in education at the local level, a school board member once said something to me that really stuck. She said that in all the work that a district does around education, their most basic duty is in protecting the safety of students while in their care. She had a very good point. It is in that spirit today that I am here today with a bill from DPS that does just that. In their work with pupil transportation, DPS has identified several measures that can strengthen their ability to ensure our kids are safe while being transported to and from school and other school-related activities. There are four key components to this bill that I will outline and then will be described in greater detail by our testifier. First, strengthening the requirements for bus drivers to ensure that all students are off a school bus before they leave it in a transportation facility after a run. There were three such incidents in the last school year, and there have already been three incidents during this school year, and we're only about two-thirds of the way through. The recommendations in this bill require drivers to inspect their bus after a trip, to require carriers or districts to report violations to the director of pupil transportation within 72 hours. And if a child is left on a bus, it qualifies as a gross misdemeanor, and the driver is subject to a range of penalties. And I just want to point out, keep in mind that the kids that we're talking about in this case are likely our youngest and our most vulnerable students, the ones who are less likely to be able to be aware of their surroundings and self-advocate when something seems amiss. And I will just say, I have a chatty kid who, when he was in about first grade, did not get off on the bus where he was supposed to be, and thankfully we had a responsive transportation department that took care of it. But I can see easily how that can happen. Second, creating a violation for operating a school bus that has been placed out of service. To paint this picture, understand that DPS inspects all school buses annually. In the event of an equipment failure, say, like with the brakes, as happened just this past year, DPS formally marks this bus as out of service. If a driver drives or an owner permits to be driven such a bus in this situation, it will qualify as a gross misdemeanor. And the last two are efforts towards consistency and safety policy between the traditional larger buses, types A, B, C, and D. And I'm not sure, we had some handouts that have pictures of the different types so you can see exactly what it is we're talking about. So the difference between these larger buses and then the smaller Type 3 vehicles. The first of these is a requirement that a Type 3 vehicle driver whose license is suspended, revoked, or canceled by Minnesota or another jurisdiction notify their employer. This is currently the case for the drivers of the larger buses. And finally, Senate File 2252 requires web cutters, tools that are capable of cutting through seatbelts in case of an emergency. They will need to be carried on Type 3 vehicles, these smaller buses and vans. The larger buses are already required to carry these tools, but there's confusion regarding whether the Type 3 vehicles are required, and for the sake of safety and the fact that these are the vehicles that actually have the seatbelts, this will resolve that concern. I hope you'll agree that each of these measures represents a meaningful and much-needed step in protecting our children. Here with me today to provide more details and answer questions is Major Silky of the Department of Public Safety.
Greetings. Welcome.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I could walk through the bill here and just give a summation of some of the individual changes here that we've recommended. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today so that you can hear our suggestions so that we can potentially move to increase some of the public safety risks that we feel aren't currently covered through our existing statutes.
Great, thanks. And just please state your name for the record.
I'm sorry, Nancy Silky.
And Mr. Chair?
And it's Major Silky, right?
Major Nancy Silky. Mr. Chair, I also neglected to mention that I do have two amendments, so I just want to make sure that we get those distributed and dealt with. So.
Great. Should we pass those out now so folks can glance at them?
We can.
Oh, they're already distributed,
you start,
members.
Start going into your remarks.
The
I apologize.
0815 and the A1. Okay.
Yes.
Great. Do you want to offer those now or do you want to wait?
We might as well go ahead and offer them now and get it out of the way if we can.
Very good. Okay.
They're pretty minor.
Which would you like to take first?
Let's do the, not the A1, the
0815?
Yes.
Okay. 0815, this is an author's amendment.
It just clarifies getting the in the shape that we want it in, and if right. I can move this move the A1 amendment to SF 2252.
Okay, so we'll take the 0815. Questions, members? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Chair, do we have that?
Yeah, it's in our packets, Senator Senjum.
Okay.
Right. All right. All in favor of the 815 amendment, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries. And the A1.
These are just minor wording and consistency issues that
okay.
Council Berezovsky.
Great.
Find.
All right. On the A1 amendment, questions, members? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, no. Motion carries.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Senjum.
I'm not sure if it was covered, but on line 211, seems to me that should be within instead of with. And maybe it was covered in one of the amendments we just spoke to. I don't know.
All right. Senator Senjum moves to change the word with on line 211 to within. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? No. Motion carries. Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Egan, in regards, Senator Kent, rather, in regards to this issue, You mentioned there are three times already this school year. Any insight as to why? I mean, you know, three times over 10 years, three times this school year. Any insight as to what's happening or why?
I can defer to Major Silkey to talk about the specifics.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, currently there is no requirement, statutorily at least, for drivers to conduct a post-trip inspection. Many of the districts and operators have an internal policy, but there is no statutory requirement. So my understanding is that the inspection just hasn't been completed.
So, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So what you're saying is that in the school districts, you have empirical proof that if they do an inspection, these sorts of things don't happen. And so these three incidents this year are because there was no post-trip inspection. Would that be fair to say?
Major Silkey.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senator Kiffmeyer, I would say that that would be fair to say that there has been some evidence that we've seen. For example, on one of the incidents, there was a camera in the bus, and we were able to watch the video. There's a system called a check system, if you will, where there's a red button placed in the back of the bus. And so the purpose of this check system is for the driver to do the post-trip inspection, and then by going back to the back of the bus and pushing the button, it's supposed to demonstrate that, yes, in fact, the post-trip inspection was completed and the lights flash and it resets the system. However, in this particular video that we watched, it became a bit of a routine. There was a child in the bus that we could visibly see from the video, the top of the child's head. And so it became a bit of a exercise, if you will, to go back and push the button, losing the purpose of the system where you're actually physically checking all of the seats and looking on the floor as well to determine if there was a child there. So having said that, some of the other suggestions maybe from the industry has been, could we not just have a recommendation to mandate that the check system be installed in all buses? Our bill does not propose that because of the costs incurred. It's approximately $100 for new buses and $300 to retrofit existing buses. And that system and that video showed that the system didn't really generate the results as intended. So we do believe that it's primarily that the post-trip isn't being performed, and then we do have that example of when the check system was utilized and the child still was not identified and they were sitting upright in the bus seat and the video showed the top of their head. As the driver walked back, both directions did not observe the child or was not even looking.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's concerning because we're passing a law to require all these post checks, and yet we have a situation here where even with that internal requirement, it wasn't done sufficiently to take care of a very important issue. A little one who fell asleep or whatever may be that they were there. So how do you think this law is going to make it better? I mean, how is this going to work since you...
Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Kent.
A part of it is there is a penalty now. There are, if a child is left, it's not just for failure to conduct the inspection, but if a child is left on a bus in this type of situation where, you know, the bus route has ended, the bus driver has left the bus, and a child is left, then there are penalties that can be engaged, and it's a disincentive. It says, no, I actually need to take this very seriously and not just skip through it and hurt, you know.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, it appears as though the negative weight and consequence will motivate them to do a more thorough job where just doing it on a process basis wasn't working, and I can understand that motivation. Thank you.
Thank you. Major Silkey, you have wanted to share some thoughts with us or take us acquaint us with some of the aspects of the bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I would just add for Senator Kiffmeyer as well that we work closely. Our Director of People Transportation is actually in a different hearing today on the same bill. But we do work closely with MSBOA and MAPT, which is a Minnesota Association of People Transportation. And our hopes are that working with them that we can also expand the educational efforts and the need for this to be a priority for the drivers.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anything further, Senator Kent?
Mr. Chair, thank you. Major Silkey, do you have any additional details you'd like to review in terms of the bill?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I would just briefly summarize maybe the bill. Originally, the reason for the amendment, we had some discussions with the industry and realized that there was we had not intended for a gross misdemeanor or a disqualification of the driver's license unless the child had been left on the bus. So that would be the purpose of the A14-0815 amendment, so that we could further clarify that, so that that is not utilized unless, in fact, the child is left on the bus. And then we also did remove the operator driver due to any mandated reporting due to any constitutional concerns that may be for the self-incrimination there. To move through the bill, just in summary briefly, Section 1 amends 169.443, and as we spoke, requiring the post-trip inspection because of the numerous examples that we're even aware of. Oftentimes, we do not learn of these incidents unless through the media or a parent. And as we move through that, it establishes the offense as a gross misdemeanor if, in fact, the child is left on the bus and resulting in the disqualification for 1 year only of the school bus endorsement. They can still continue to operate other types of buses and other capacities as far as commercial vehicle driver's license and any other licensing requirements that they retain at that time. As we move through Section number 4, starting at line 2.1, the purpose of that is requiring the seatbelt cutters. There has been some concerns expressed as far as what does the seatbelt cutter look like? Is there any safety risks? And so I have an example here, and basically it's an extra large letter opener type style where the blade is primarily concealed so that the larger school buses currently have the requirements, and it is part of the National School Transportation Specifications. So this just extends this to the Type 3 school bus vehicles and allows for it to be in those vehicles as well. Moving through to Section 5, there's a requirement then that we propose requiring that if the driver does lose their license, that they're mandated to report that to their employer. And Section 6, in summary, speaks that there currently is no requirement for them to report that loss of driving privileges, and so that would then require for that as well. I apologize. Section 5 deals with the notification being made to the Director of Pupil Transportation in regards to a child being left on the bus. And lastly, Section 7 and 8 identify the violation as being a disqualifying offense resulting in cancellation of the school bus driver's endorsement of the offender driver's license for 1 year if they're convicted.
All right, questions, members? All right, Senator Kent. Motion. Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Kelleher.
Good afternoon, welcome, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Tom Kelleher. I represent the Minnesota School Bus Operators Association. We certainly appreciate the State Patrol's willingness to put the amendment on that is reflective of the language we've been talking to them about, that the greater penalty would occur if the child is actually left unattended on a bus. I think really the only comment I really want to make is that my association really wants to make is that the one-year sanction of losing your S endorsement violation of driving a school bus pretty much ends that driver's career. They're going to go do something else and not come back. And I know the severity and the importance of leaving a child unattended on a bus. And, I'm certain that the members of this committee understand that as well. But I would just ask the committee, is it appropriate to have a one-year suspension of that S endorsement other than, you know, something on the order of 30, 60, 90 days that is end of your opportunity or your job as a school bus driver. And I think that's all I'd really like to say at this time.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Kent.
Mr. Chair. I just wanted to add that the internal policy of many school districts already includes termination of in that kind of a circumstance. So having this 1 year sanction is probably in many ways less than what will end up happening to many of these drivers.
Thank you. Anything further, members? Would anyone else
Mr.
like
Chair?
To? Oh, sorry, Senator Wicker and then Senator Westrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In Section 5, there's a reference in reporting to the Director of Pupil Transportation. This would be for the school district or through?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Kent.
Mr. Chair, Senator Wicker, this is to the Director of Pupil Transportation within the Department of Public Safety.
Okay.
All right. Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, just to the testifier and Senator Kent, why 1 year? What's this? Where did you come up with that idea? And have you thought anything more of 30 days for the first penalty or something, 60 days? And I just ask because I know sometimes school districts struggle to find good qualified bus drivers, and if we add one more. The bus drivers I know, I just wouldn't do this with any sort of intention or harm. And I guess to that point, is there some option for compromise here and send a strong message that you got to be extra careful? But I hate to put some of these people. It's a part-time job for a lot of people to help pay the bills and. I hate to make it harder to find bus drivers as well as have unintended consequences of taking good folks that have made a mistake out of the pool.
Senator Chair. Senator Westrom, I appreciate what you're saying, and in the conversation about, you know, finding good bus drivers is one that is challenging. This is a question of how many is too many and how many is too few when you have young children being left in potentially really hazardous conditions when you consider the weather that we can get in the summer and in the winters in Minnesota. You know, the risk is just really very great. And, you know, I think there needs to be a strong message sent that, you know, how many second chances does one get to leave a child in harm's way like that is my question.
Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, maybe I missed it. You say second chance. This would be which offense? Are you talking a second or third offense here?
Mr. Chair, Senator Westrom,
Senator
I'm
Kent.
Referring to if your premise is that this is a driver who's had a completely perfect spotless record and then one time has this incident happen that a child is left on a bus. And this is not a bus driver stepping away for a couple minutes. This is he is finished his route, and he's turning in his bus, and he's turning it off for the day, or, you know, this was the morning run, and he's coming back in the evening.
Right.
This is serious. And so the question is, are we going to give a driver a second chance after putting a child's life at jeopardy?
And so
that's the question.
Mr. Chair, Senator Kent, I mean, under the bill, we're giving him a second chance, but after 1 year, versus some other period of time, is it right?
Senator Kent.
Mr. Chair, Senator Westrom, yes. But that's, the point being we need to send a very strong signal.
Sure.
Right.
To be very careful.
And rest assured, Mr. Chair, I it is serious. I can't, you know, it's hard to even imagine how they could miss somebody, but, you know, things can happen. So I just think we should think about that, move this hearing along, but I just bring it up for us members to pontificate on and see what others think as well.
Thank you. I for my part, I think probably what would most likely happen in most instances in most school districts is they would terminate that driver, and that driver just simply wouldn't be returning to bus driving, hopefully in any school district, in my opinion, much less that school district. I don't know if the law can reach that far. I don't think a school bus driver who leaves a child on a bus parked in the yard, the bus yard or the bus garage, should be entrusted with the care of our children for transportation purposes ever again. That's a fundamental failure of their core job responsibility, taking care of our kids. Leaving a little kid on a bus is just not acceptable, period.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Giffmeyer.
Thank you. I remember my dad as a school bus driver, and I never even gave it a whole lot of thought all those years. But at the end of every bus route, he would walk down the aisle to the back of the bus on one side and walk back the other. I'm just a kid, and so I don't think much of it, but I suspect that was, I think it was scarves, hats, mittens, too, left behind, not just kids. And just catching up and everything, and it only takes a few seconds. I remember he would just do that as a matter of process. I think the consequence for a child is so absolutely serious when you have it that serious. This is not a huge time-consuming thing. And so if you don't have the diligence as a bus driver to do this kind of small common-sense thing that probably many do without ever needing a law to do it, that maybe this consequence will help, but because to the child, it is so absolutely serious. And many times these are the younger ones or whatever like that, so you can't expect them to just do that. So I think with the school bus, you know, supporting it and the patrol, and you've kind of worked through all this language and so on and so forth, that I think it's good. But the big thing I think of it, just such extreme consequences for a few minutes of diligence is worth it.
Thank you. Ms. Berezovsky has a suggestion just to...
It was taken care of already.
Oh, never mind. She does not. All right. Anything further, members? Would anyone else like to testify on the bill?
Chair.
Senator Sendrum.
I don't know if this going... Is this going to be voted on today? Are we going to have time to think about this?
We need to move it along to another policy committee, so we do have to vote it out.
Well, I'll just say I'm somewhat sympathetic, and I'm thinking of my own granddaughter's bus driver in Grand Meadow, and these kind of people are all over, but his name is Joe, and like everybody in Grand Meadow just loves Joe. I mean, he's the kind of bus driver that when your child is a kindergarten type person, I mean, literally, he'll come out, he'll help them, he'll bring them cookies. I mean, everybody just loves Joe. Now, what if somehow, through some set of circumstances, it just so happened that Joe didn't do this, and now Joe is gone? And my point is, I'm just not sure that in every conceivable circumstance that we can think of, Is it really worth it to cost maybe an otherwise terrific bus driver his or her job? I don't know. I'm troubled by that.
Well, Senator Sendrum, I can't imagine the community would be very pleased if that school district kept Joe as a driver after something like that happened. I would be really surprised at any school district that didn't terminate a bus driver who left a little kid on a bus overnight. I can't imagine it.
Mr. Chair, there could be a whole... I mean, what if Joe at the time saw somebody in a cardiac arrest, and he had a... I don't know if they have defibrillators, but what if he went to rescue somebody in just this terribly unusual situation and somehow became distracted enough so that this little task passed him by?
Yeah.
Well, and then he loses his job.
Well, Senator Sendrum,
trying to be a hero, you know? So, I mean, there are certain things that can happen within the lives of people that shouldn't cost them their job.
Right. Well,
and that's my plea.
Well, this is not a termination. That's, you know, of course, up to the school district. This is a suspension for a year upon a conviction for having violated what would be this new provision. So if there were extenuating circumstances, that could be perhaps explained in the process of carrying out the conviction, you know, the attempt to seek the conviction, and Joe would have the opportunity to explain the extenuating circumstances, maybe could avoid then the conviction, and everyone's happy and Joe gets to continue to be the bus driver. But if in fact He left a little kid on a bus overnight, and whatever the extenuating circumstances are, those facts will come to light.
And my point, Mr. Chairman, no bus driver, if they care enough to drive a bus, they don't do this on purpose. There are some other sets of circumstances intervening, so we just proceed.
All right. Well, thanks. Appreciate the perspective. All right. Senate file 20. What is it?
22.
Senate file 22. Oh, sorry, Senator Westrum.
Mr. Chair, just Representative Kent, to the chair's comments, and it made me think: if a bus driver hits another car or bumps, runs into something, do we suspend or take their license for that too? Because I mean, there's a host of things that I think could be concerning. That a bus driver could end up with unintentional, but do we do this in other areas of bus drivers? Because I see that could be a concern.
Senator Kent or Major Silkey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Westrum. There are a range of other disqualifying offenses, including any felony offense. So, again, you'd be judging it on a case-by-case basis. Any misdemeanor, gross misdemeanor, or felony offense of Chapter 152, which is drugs, there are a number of violations in the world of indecent exposure and child pornography and harmful materials. A DUI violation involving a school bus or a Head Start bus. And then in one case, the endorsement can be a five-year penalty. You can see a range of options.
How about, Mr. Chair, Senator Kent, specifically to my question, if they run into bump a car or run into a car or another vehicle?
I would think, Mr. Chair, under the felony offense, if it's a vehicular incident that rises to that sort of level, potentially. Hmm. But, again, you're looking at the actions and the intents and the behaviors of each incident.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Kent, and those are one-year suspensions as well, or are they permanent suspensions?
Mr. Chair,
Senator Kent.
I believe that the DUIs and the 169A52 IC reciprocation, do you don't tell me that? The DUI and another one that I'm not sure which one it is, it's 169A.52, can be up to 5 years.
Okay.
The rest of them fall under the one year. The same one-year heading.
And last question for the testifier.
Senator Westrum.
From the school buses.
Mr. Kelly.
Something like this covered in training typically? Has it been heightened recently that it's now covered and used to not be, or is this something that's been going on for a long time?
Mr. Keller. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, again, my name is Tom Kelleher from the Minnesota School Bus Operators Association. We do lots of training. Some bus operators, they put a sign on the door of their bus that says bus empty, that someone has gone back and checked. Some of the contractors have them installed a button that you have to go back and push on the back of the bus. So we're doing as much as we can. I think, obviously we can't do everything in regards to training, but there's a lot of requirements in regards to being a bus driver in compliance with state law. And I think the last thing I just want to say, Mr. Chairman, I think you sort of hit on part of it is that leaving a child on a bus unattended overnight is certainly an awful thing. That's one parameter. The other side is 10 minutes, 15 minutes. I'm not going to sit here and debate with the committee whether that's overnight or an hour is similar, same, or different. But I think that's part of the concept in regards to this bill is that, and I mentioned to the state patrol, if I'm a bus driver, I get right off my bus, I'm standing there, and I turn around and go, I didn't go back and do my post-trip inspection. Is that a failure? Or, the bus is in the garage for 5 minutes. Is that a failure? And I think that's something up for the committee to think about.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Westrom.
Senator Kent, can you refer me to the section of the bill to that point? Are we, it's unattended. What's the time frame that we're talking about?
Mr. Chair Senator Kent. And Senator Westrom, the language in the bill is, if a child is left unattended on a school bus after a post-trip inspection or as the result of the failure to conduct a post-trip inspection under this subdivision, the driver is guilty of a gross misdemeanor.
Very good. Thank you.
And Senator Kent, to be clear, they would have to be convicted of that gross misdemeanor in order to receive that one-year suspension from driving a bus.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Kipmeyer.
Yeah, in regards to that, I think it's a reasonable thing to say if they don't do it within 15 minutes after a ignition is turned off of the bus or, you know, some sort of an agreeable time limit, because I think there are those things that a child may be going down and need some help or something's going on. But I think there's a reasonableness here of thinking of something. I think it could be a relatively short phrase that could be included that would maybe kind of cover some of those reasonable things.
Senator Kent.
Mr. Chair and Senator Kiffmeyer, I would be agreeable to some sort of parameter like that.
So, Senator Kent, do you want to work with Senator Westrom and Senator Kiffmeyer to, you know, maybe you can make that amendment in judiciary? All right.
We were just discussing that, Mr.
Chair. I won't call it back so we can inspect that detail here. All right.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Weaver.
I'd just like to say vote for No Child Left Behind.
I think we should title this bill. All right, very good. So anything further, members? Would anyone else like to testify on Senate File 2252? Senator Kent, do you have a motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move that Senate File 2252, as amended, be referred to judiciary.
Be recommended to pass and referred to judiciary. Anything on the motion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion carries. Thank you, Senator Kent. That concludes our agenda, members. We are back here today at 3 o'clock. We are adjourned.